Welcome back to EAA Radio Live.
Hi, everybody. I'm Stuck Mike with EAA Radio's Morning Preflight, and this is the Aviation Journalists Roundtable. We're in segment now three now, speaking with Tom Haynes, who's the editor-in-chief of AOPA Pilot and a senior vice president of AOPA, Jeb Burnside, who serves as editor-in-chief of Aviation Safety Magazine, and Fareed Guillo, who's the manager of electronic publications for EAA, including the various e-newsletters that EAA members can receive by email on a weekly, monthly basis. So we were talking about the globalization of general aviation commerce, and Tom, you were just about to make a comment before we broke. If you want to do that, go ahead.
Well, I'm just going to point out that, well, you know, a lot of, it's been in the news a lot lately, particularly with the Cirrus merger with the Chinese company. But, you know, it's really not new. Bombardier has owned Learjet for 20 years or so. And, you know, Cirrus was owned by a Bahrainian company for 10 years. Piper is owned by a Brunei company or Brunei Investment Group. So it's really been going on for a long time. But I think it's, you know, China and the opportunities there and people's opinions about China obviously have weighed heavily on the whole thing right now. But I think that Jeb brought up a good point earlier about, you know, China really wanting to get into the business because they want to build aircraft. And so I guess...
How bad of a thing is that?
You know, from a cultural standpoint, you know, there are people who have issues with that, and I can certainly understand that to a point. But at the end of the day, the fact that they're wanting to get into it because they want to build airplanes, hopefully improve them, and maybe as a result have lower costs and improve products for the rest of us, not such a bad thing.
That enlightenment could rub off on us a little bit.
Well, because you kind of introduced that wonderment again into aviation, at least the Chinese population is discovering a new way of enjoying aviation. They announced about trying to open 3,000 general aviation airports in a certain amount of time. I don't know if it's 5 years or 10 years. Plus, the airspace is supposed to open up. I think it's up to 3,000 feet, or is it 3,000 meters? I can't remember which one it is. But it's certainly not a lot of airspace. But at least they're trying to encourage that. That's going to be staged in from time to time. Now, there's someone on the grounds right now that arrived, just did a round-the-world flight. His name is Wei Chen, and he left Memphis in May, and he flew his TBM around the world. And he claims to be the first Chinese national to fly around the world and also to fly a single engine through Chinese airspace to do it, because most round-the-world flights have had to go divert around it because of, obviously, considerations.
There was a recent news story about a single engine airplane being the first to land at Beijing International. Might have been him.
It could have been.
Yeah.
Certainly he was claiming it on his Facebook page. I'm inclined to believe him, but you know, obviously there could be something else. But
right.
Certainly I would say as long as Communist China has been in control of the airspace, I think that is the first person to do that. In his events in China, they made big deals about it, and it's an inspiring story, at least for the Chinese people. And I think that those are the kind of things that maybe the populace will glom onto and being excited about general aviation.
Well, you know, we're so bogged down in arguing about what has heretofore been a very routine increase in the debt ceiling. And meanwhile, China is buying Cirrus and TCM, and other countries are doing other things, and we've really lost kind of sight of what's important here, I'm afraid.
Well, so the glass half full side of that issue is that general aviation will get some kind of indirect boost, and so let's carry that idea forward to how to boost the pilot population. AOPA conducted a study of flight schools in 2010, is that right?
That's correct.
And so could you share some of the key findings from that study and talk about how that's being adopted?
Sure. It was a pretty far-reaching study of flight schools and CFIs and student pilots who didn't complete, as well as recently completed new pilots, and probably the biggest piece of research like that that's ever been done. And we shared the results of the study at AOPA Summit last year, and this year in Hartford in September when we have AOPA Summit again, we're having convening another meeting where we're going to be sharing kind of what's happened since then. But basically, there were a number of factors that when the researchers went through and kind of put all the data together, that there were about a dozen or so things that, sort of kind of bubbled to the surface out of the research that showed what it is that people who are going through a flight training experience want and need from that experience in order for them to have a much higher likelihood of completing. Because they are arguably 70 to 80% of the people who, begin the flight training process drop out before they, finish. I mean, what other business would ever put up with those kind of numbers? You know, customer walks in the door and, you know, it starts buying your product and then, you know, drops off at, you know, a rate of 70 or 80%. Who would put up with that? So what we were able to identify were a number of factors that if flight schools would begin to adopt them and CFIs as well, they would probably, at least according to the study, be able to turn that number around and decrease the number of people who dropped out. And some of them were quite simple. Socialization. It was determined that people who were in a flight school environment where there was a lot of socialization and they could hang out with pilots and other students had a much higher completion rate than, places where that didn't occur. So it could be as simple as flight schools every month acknowledging who soloed that month in some significant way, having a little, you know, a party with, you know, hot dogs or cake and ice cream or whatever out at the hangar and invite everybody in and celebrate that. And just recognition on a website and those kinds of things, which a lot of flight schools don't do, is that's something as simple as that could make a difference. And it's other things like, you know, having that you would more likely expect, you know, having clean and serviceable airplanes, having a flight instructor that follows a standardized syllabus, and some of those kind of things. But
doesn't leave for the airlines.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, keeping
it's less an issue now than it was.
Keeping a flight instructor on board throughout the process. So. There's quite a number of these things, and it's all out on our website. You can download the entire results and read them in a PDF format. And as a result, what we're doing is this year is going around the country and convening meetings of flight schools again to continue the dialogue, to feed back to them what it is that we learned from the study, and to begin and continue to receive input from them about what it is that makes their life difficult. Why isn't that they're not able to achieve some of these things, and to help their students to. Further, you know, next step would be to continue to develop tools and resources that would help them be more effective.
Jeb?
Well, I don't know, a couple of thoughts. First of all, does AOPA have a timetable on when it might start to release some of the results? I'm just kind of curious.
Well, the results were released last year, okay. And they're available on our website. Okay. Anybody can go out and get them and dig around and come up with your own ideas based on what it is that you glean from the results.
Yeah. I've long maintained that a lot of our problem in general aviation in attracting and retaining students has a lot to do with the cliquish or clubbish nature of a lot of aviation organizations. Your traditional rural FBO, where you know maybe the building's kind of run down and a couple of guys drinking the free coffee or cracking jokes about student pilots and this kind of thing, and it tends to send prospective students back out to their car and leaving skid marks in the parking lot. But it's a very difficult nut to crack, and there's a lot of competition for Americans' recreational dollars these days, and a lot fewer of those dollars are available generally. But it's definitely something that the industry needs to address and resolve and come up with some solutions. None of them are going to be easy, and there will be more than one solution, but something we definitely need to do.
Fareed, you are a flight instructor part-time right now.
My thought kind of goes along the lines of what Jeb is talking about, and that is you've got a geographical barrier and that these airports are tucked away sometimes 5 to 10 miles out of town in a small town, or they're lost in a metro area that just you can't get to easily. And so you got a geographical challenge that a lot of other hobbies and recreational activities don't have. The other is the cliquish nature of the airport, and constantly that airport and the people who patronize the airport, the locals, have to be more vigilant about making it a welcoming place all the time. And not just, you know, every once in a while. Rod Hightower sat on the stage yesterday and talked about how EAA is trying to at least get going with flying clubs eventually, first here in Oshkosh, but also working with the chapters where you've kind of got a built-in group of people who are interested in sustaining aviation activity, and that, you know, that is one way. But how many newsletters have you read where it says, come on out to the airport? And it's like, that's the big challenge, getting the people out to the airport, whether it be geographically or a mindset.
Tom, briefly, will AOPA be releasing any kind of adoption data? Is there follow-up to find out whether these recommendations are being implemented and to what extent?
Oh, sure. We actually started a monthly email newsletter called Flight School Business that is primary purpose is to continue communicating out every two-week basis, what's happening in the flight school community and what's resulting. You know, anytime that we can get any feedback from flight schools that show that they've had success in adopting some of these measures or any other techniques that they're using that work, this is a communications vehicle for flight schools and flight instructors that hopefully we can share those wins and successes.
Coming up in the last segment of the Aviation Journalist Roundtable, we'll talk about general aviation safety. You're listening to EAA Radio Live.